Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenziano, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good, brother. How you doing?
Always making it happen, big man. A little nervous now, for the proximity of our next guest. I hope I'm safe, Gino. You know, I don't want to be on the run here, but today's guest is a behavior analyst and body language expert who has trained alongside the FBI, U.S. military, and the Department of Defense. His extensive training has made him the go-to consultant for Fortune 100 companies, attorneys, and entrepreneurs all over the world. So without further ado, Scott Rouse, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And again, I'm sorry for dressing like a meth dealer, but this is, I just got
it. Well, why are you dressed like a meth dealer? Maybe we'll start with this. Tell us what you can.
I'm dressed like a meth dealer.
No. We'll leave it at that. That's okay, he's a man of few words here. If we can't get into what the real reason behind it, please share with us your background and how you got started in business.
I started off as a little kid. My father got me into body language because he would tell me what was wrong with people. Because I would see someone and say, "I wonder what's wrong with that guy," because he was a doctor. And he would say, "Oh, that guy's got his ankle hurts," because the guy'd be limping, you know. So he would teach me about behavior and things you could tell about what somebody was, how they felt, what was going on. And then he started telling me what they were going to do next because of the problem they had with their ankle or their
arm. I'm so uncomfortable right now, Gino. I'm so uncomfortable. What are you thinking about me? Like, this is where it goes, right? Sorry, carry on.
It doesn't work that way. Anyway. So my father got me into body language, and then I just read about it and studied it from when I was literally, 10, 12 years old, all the way through junior high, high school, and then ended up going to Transylvania University in Kentucky, and I studied psychology and literary arts, and then ended up going to Berklee College of Music after that. But at the same time, there always seemed to be people around that were into body language, so I'd start gravitating toward them. And I started training cops not long, or the police departments not long after that, because I knew as much as the people that I would run into who were teaching interrogation and things, I would know as much as they knew. Like, geez, you got to combine, if you'll just talk for 30 minutes or an hour or whatever. So that's when I learned how to train. Or that's one of the ways that I learned how to dress. I started when I was a kid, but that's one, probably the simplest way to talk about it. So that's what I did. And then for the business part, I ended up being the entrepreneur in residence at the Nashville Entrepreneur Center from 2011 to 2017. And what I would do is I was assigned the task of training the new startups and CEOs in their body language. So when they pitched, it would be more advantageous for them to build that, you know how it is when you're pitching something, you've got to build that initial bond with someone. Everybody thinks it's like Shark Tank. You know, they think you go in and you make this pitch, like, I'll invest in that. But you're really just going for the first meeting. So I would train them in the ways to look like you should, to help gain trust with the person you're talking to. And then I learned how to create pitch decks and how to go through there, and came up with this thing that became known as the 14 slides. And it sort of became the Nashville pitch. Was the way that I would structure these things, because it worked to this day. And it's not, and it's not every time, it's not millions of dollars, because a lot of it's contests and things like that. But to this day, every person I've ever trained to pitch something they've gotten funded. But now I'm watching those companies that I started training in like 2011 through 2017. I'm watching these guys become like billionaires as they go on to pitch their and sell their companies that they've created. So, but every person I've trained, man, woman, child, whoever it is, they've all been funded. Not all have been successful as a business, but they've all, up to this point,
they got
all
the money funded. That was up to them after that, right?
Yeah. And it might be $5,000. It could be, couple of million dollars, those kind of things, so it goes from very little to a fairly good size in my range of things. And then the contests. The pitch battles.
That's why Scott's on the podcast right now, because he's written a great book, Understanding Body Language. I think everyone should go out and buy the book, because as I was saying off camera, two things that we should really learn in school, negotiation / communication and in money. We don't learn those. We had Chris Voss on the podcast a couple weeks ago. Go check him out on the Jake and Gino channel. That was a great podcast on negotiation. Scott, you're saying on this pitch. They've all gotten funded. What are some of the elements, some of the things that they've done to be able to get funded?
It's learning how to people, you know, from a religious aspect, point of view, when it comes to this, I always say Jesus loves you, but I'm his favorite. So keep that in mind as I go ahead and talk about humans being animals and how they, you're working on a brain to accept what you're talking about or to like you. So I train them to do the things that make people like them. For example, I focus a lot on what's called matching and mirroring. Most people are under the impression they understand that because they think mirroring is when somebody walks up and does this, you walk up and do that too, you know, but you have to sort of ease your way into it. And this is depending on what the situation is, you may not want to cross your arms. You may not want to sit there and do that because it'd look weird. They may think you're mocking them or making fun of them or something. So it's training.
You have to have awareness with it, right? Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Everybody's different, but you have to figure out who you're talking to or what kind of person you're talking to. And one of the ways I teach them to do that is to listen to what everybody always says, listen to what they're saying. But here's how you listen. If you really want to get into and find out what kind of person you're dealing with as soon as you can, you listen to the words they use. There are three ways we all are when we communicate. Everybody's communication style is different, you know, but they're all the same in a way. But they break down these three different categories. They break down to visual, audio, and kinesthetic. So some people who are visual people will talk about how things look to them. You know, they'll say, oh, that's beautiful. I like that blue sweater. Or they'll talk about movies. Or in their vernacular, they will pepper it with words that talk about the way things look. An audio person will say, and they'll say things like, I see what you're saying. That looks good to me. That's the visual person. Then you have the audio person who will go, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. That sounds great. Her shirt's a little bit loud, isn't it? Everything would be around sounds, you know, not everything, but most of it will. Then you have the feeling person, the kinesthetic person who will say things like, oh, it was a rough day. You know, it's really tough or things are really smooth. They'll talk about the way things feel to them kinesthetically. So once you figure out what that person is, once you hear a few of those go off, then you make your vernacular, you come from that direction. If they talk about the way things look, you talk about the way things look to you or you see what they're saying, those types of things. Mm-hmm. You have to get into it and find the words and phrases that will work best for those types of people. And depending on what your business is, if you're dealing with an analytical person, see that you're usually it's VCs and these guys who don't have a whole lot of worries. You know, they do have the normal human worries, but outside of that, they don't have a lot of worries. So you've got to look at how old they are, what they used to listen to. We do a study of the people they're going to pitch to. I find out who they are. I have them find out who they are and bring the information. I go, okay, here's how we break this down. We talk about this. We, you know, it's a home run because we know this guy's into baseball or this woman's into soccer. And we'll form our sentences around those things. So it's the whole thing is grabbing their entire brain one little piece at a time. So they slowly feel like they know you.
You're building rapport subconsciously almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting too, because when we were taught on mirroring, it was repeating the last three things the person may have said.
And that's great.
Get into it, but you're going even deeper. This is a whole next level of mirroring here.
Yeah. I'm sure it's
fascinating. Yeah.
I'm sure Voss talked about how you would the last one to fives, I think is what he calls it. When you use those last one to five words, Oprah's the master of that. She's got that down because somebody will say, you know, that's when we went fishing this weekend, and she'll go fishing this weekend. So it's like that last one to five words, you just repeat them, and they
connecting.
Yeah, they think,
right?
And they think right. You've said something, so they want to talk more. It's an interrogation little trick you use. Because when they say something, you'll just repeat the last part of it. So it feels like you've said something back to them, so they'll keep talking. You know, it's not the way to do it, but it's just one of those little things. If you add all these little things together, it becomes a powerful tool.
So did Oprah go to Transylvania together too? Or you know, because clearly this is not natural, right?
I don't know if she did or not.
Okay.
I don't know. But she's a great communicator, though. I'll tell you that. She's what an interviewer she is.
So let me put everybody who's listening to this into their state. The first thing that I think that Scott is saying is you need to prepare for the pitch. Don't go in there and not understanding your audience. Whether you're speaking on stage to an audience or you're speaking to 10 people in the boardroom, understand where they are. A great example is that movie Air that they had the Michael Jordan movie. That movie was perfect for people my age. You turn that movie on, you have 80s music, you've got everything. It's like instant hit. It brings me back to
where you got Michael Jordan. You don't need anything more than that, right?
Saying though is like the whole movie resonated completely with me. So if you're out there and you're trying to raise capital from somebody or from a group of people, understand them individually. And if you can hit them on their level of their history and of their memories, man, you will connect at a different level. Now, does it take work? Absolutely. But have you ever even thought of something that simple to do? Most of us aren't trained. This is all learnable. This is why you need to read the book, Understanding Body Language, and learning these techniques, because we aren't born with these techniques. We need to learn these techniques so we can actually be able to go out there and raise money for those deals that you're trying to raise. On the science, you also mentioned olfaction, and you had mentioned another one here. I don't know what the last one was. Taste. So how do those come into play in the science aspect?
Well, smells will take you back to when you're a kid, you know, when you talk about your olfactory system. When you smell cookies, when I smell chocolate chip cookies, I immediately think of my mom and us being little and us waiting on the cookies to come out. And that will take you back. Our perfume will do it to you. You know, your first girlfriend in junior high or high, whenever you start dating, I don't know how old kids start dating these days, but whenever you start dating and you smell girls' perfume, and there's that one girl, you're your first girlfriend, and there's that one. It's probably some nasty, gnarly thing now, but back then it was just like magic because it smelled like a girl, you know. So that'll take you right back to that. So what you want to do is, one of the things that I always tell these guys to do when they have people come to their office and they have a meeting with whoever they're, you know, the VC. Let's say they don't for some reason go to the VC's office. The VC comes to them. Then I say, look, man, get some cookies. And get in there and heat them up so they smell. You don't have to eat them. Nobody's going to eat them. But, you know, if you have to put a lighter under them and burn them a little bit, get that cookie smell in there, because it takes them back to feeling like they're home as soon as they come in. There's all kinds of things you can do, especially if you know where that person, if you know that person's history, where they're from, how old they are. If you have these things checked off, you can go in and you sort of do a profile of them, and then you present them. What you're going to present them, everything's honest. There's nothing crooked about any of that. Mm-hmm. It's just your presentation.
You're just giving them a little back rub. You're warming them up a little bit. You're coming to those hot and ready Krispy Kremes with the red light on and just opening that and letting that sugar, take over. Yeah.
Says the man who used to use cupcakes to woo doctors and nurses to buy his pharmaceutical drugs, huh?
I didn't go to Transylvania U, all right? I was right under Count Dracula, pal.
You sucked at selling, huh? Your cupcakes sold. You didn't sell. Is that what's going on, brother? Is that what happened back then?
I just opened them up and I let the smell take over, all right? And if it was pumpkin season from, what is it, October to Christmas, we'd bring the lattes in. So we did it.
I love that. Scott, you talk about nonverbal cues in the book. Can we go over some nonverbal cues? I think that would really help the listeners.
Sure. Well, one of the things you want to look for when a person is, here's one of the most, since we're talking about pitching, let's talk about some of those things. Because if somebody is like, I get hired by VCs to go in and watch people pitch. And I can tell you if the financial guy has been talking to the CEO, or if the CEO actually found out, is aware of the financials himself, or is just parroting what the financial guy or man or woman told him. So one of the things you want to look for is I'll go over this way a little bit, is when someone's talking, you see that really quick shoulder shrug like that. Most people are under the impression you see one of these cues, it means you're lying or you're telling the truth. There are no cues that specifically mean someone's lying or someone's telling the truth. They don't exist. There's not one. I can't tell for sure if somebody's lying or not. Nobody can. I mean, it's 50-50 shot when you're coming right out of the gate, right? But it's knowing what questions to ask next and what to look for. And then you can make a decision about that after you see these things. So if anybody comes on and goes, yeah, I can tell you, that means they're lying. No, it doesn't. There are no absolutes. So one of the things you want to look for is in that little shoulder shrug like that, that usually suggests that that person may not be sure about what they're talking about. Why people do it, I don't know why they do that. So that you'll say, what our finances for this year will look like. And you'll see that quick little pop. A normal shrug should look like this, last about a second and a half. But a real quick one like that usually indicates, again, like the single one, would be that they're not sure about what, they're not positive about what they're saying. They're not confident with it, in other words. Another thing is when the financial person is talking, when they say and it looks like this almost exactly, our financials this year will be, we're going to go, you know, we're going to go 10x, and you'll see them back up a little bit as they're talking. It's not like that. It's fairly small. A lot of people say it's because they're trying to separate themselves from the lie. We don't know why they do that. I could sit there and say that too, because how would you know? But there's no research that says they're trying to separate themselves from a lie. And just let's talk about research just for a brief second. Everything I'm telling you has been researched. It's not based on fact or based on science. These are results of science, which makes them facts. And everything I'm telling you, you can research it and look into it, and it will be there. Or I'll tell you where. If somebody wants to know, let me know, because I'll talk to you about that.
Is the pullback uncertainty as well? Is that what you're saying? Is that uncertainty? I'd missed that.
Yeah, because they're most likely they're saying something that they know that they're not sure about, or they know isn't true.
Could be a stretch. So,
So saying they're lying, that's a stretch. But if they're not sure about it and they're not confident,
what I'm saying is, they may not be lying, but the uncertainty or the stretch in the numbers, meaning that they're forecasting 10x growth for Q4, and they go like that because maybe in their gut they think it's going to be 5x, but they don't really know, but they think it may be a little overly ambitious, so they're not separating, but they're uncertain, so they're uneasy about it. Is uncertain and uneasiness in a similar vein there?
It looks the same. Everyone will look a little apprehensive when they're uncertain.
They're flags.
They'll be. You'll see concern up in the brow. You know, the forehead. You'll see that happening. And a lot of times they'll squint, and you could look at that two or three different ways. People squint when they're in pain. People squint when there's a baseball flying or a basketball flying their way, and they're afraid it's going to hit them. They'll do that, or they'll squint to focus a little bit more. All these things have all kinds of different meanings. So it depends on what's happening at the time. You say, okay, this must mean this. And you look for clusters of these cues. You don't look for just one or two. I go 3 to 5 before I say that might be.
Yeah, because a guy could have a bad back doing a little of this, right?
Yeah, and he could be doing that all the time. But that becomes part of their baseline, because they would keep doing it and say, okay, I can't count that because they keep doing it over and over. It's like someone with a tick who keeps doing this all the time, or those little weird things people will do.
Or they're doing it to mess with you because you're analyzing them. They're trying to throw you off.
It could be that. It could be that. So,
you give people too much credit, Jake. You give people way too much credit. No one throws Scott off. What I love about the book, as I was reading it, for people like Jake who don't like to read, there's a lot of pictures in this book. And it's really
I like to listen. I'm an Audible guy. Okay.
Yes. I love Audible, yeah. So in one of them, I think it's really great. You've got President Clinton and his speech when he was so uncomfortable talking about the situation. If you want to diagnose that speech, because he was obviously lying, he felt uncomfortable. So when you're listening to somebody pitching a deal, what was Clinton doing in that speech? He's holding the table. He's got his fingers. Mm-hmm. He's pursed lips. He's got that barrier. He's really close to the podium. All that stuff going on can be indicators of, man, your deal sucks and you're trying to get me into this deal and it doesn't work. You want to dive into that little case study you have in the book?
Yeah, a lot of that is actually that we're seeing on him was fear. And one of the big things that to pay attention to when someone's supposed to be telling you a fact is using illustrators like I did just then. They're telling you a fact because illustrators are the way your brain emphasizes specific words or phrases like I did just then, specific words or phrases. And when those things don't land on the words like this, so I said specific words and phrases, or they kept going, that means that would suggest there's inner dialogue going on up there. So they're thinking about what's happening next, or they're thinking, did I mess up? There's an issue there. So it doesn't mean they're lying, doesn't mean they're telling the truth. It means something's up and you need to dig a little bit deeper into that and find out what's happening. So when he says, I did not have sex with that, if you'll listen to his hand hit the podium, you can hear it. They don't hit on the words. You know, it's like, I did not have sex with that woman.
So he's nervous.
I did not have. So he's not confident with that. Confidence is so important in all this. But that would suggest, along with the other cues that we saw in there, that something's up, because you're right. He's braced himself. There's a lot going on. He's in front of his wife and the whole world listened to him talk about something he shouldn't have done. And he's being questioned about it, and it's ethical. So another thing you'll see in that is you'll see disappearing lips. That's when the lips just disappear. You'll see this like, and what I call that stress mouth, because you see someone with you'll see it almost every time in someone's congressional hearing, especially if it's about their ethics. Because that's just something, for some reason, people do. Some people may have a habit of doing that. And it may mean nothing. But most of the time, you'll see that person is under a high amount of stress when that starts. Mm-hmm. So there's a few of the things you'll see during that. And his forehead isn't really doing as much of what we term the grief muscle, which would show that he's that grieving, not just grieving, but sad about all that. So it was some odd psychological things, in my opinion, that were happening there as well. But I'm sure it's from panic and fear and nervousness of being in front of the world, talking about something that you know you did, but you're saying you didn't do it. And it's something that wasn't good, you know.
I know how to overcome this, Gino. You ready?
Yeah, talk to me, brother.
So if you're on the other side of Scott, he's analyzing you, right? The night before, go load up on Botox. Freeze the face and don't use hand motions.
Yeah.
Poker face.
Sit real still. Yeah. And then I'll know nothing's wrong at that point. You're just going, yeah, man, we're going to go to the. People have tried that, believe me.
I'm trying it right now.
Last question before we go to the break. This Moravian guy, do you agree with the 7-38-55 rule? 93% of your body language is nonverbal. Can you go into that real quick?
Yeah, there's a thing called the people look at it like, and you'll hear him say, body language, you know, communication is 93% body language, 7% the words you use, and 38% the tone of voice. You know, so the 38-55 rule, not 93%,
yes,
95%. But when you take away the body language and the tone of voice, then you have words, which are 7%.
Yes.
And that started, I heard that back in the 80s.
Yes.
And when I heard that, I used to call anybody about to get information about behavior from them. There are universities from where I am all the way to Los Angeles and back that hate me because I call them all the time asking them what they know new. But with the 7-38-55 rule, if you'll think about that, it says that communication is 93% or 55% body language, 38% the tone of voice you use, and then 7% words. Now, that would mean we could go anywhere in the world and we wouldn't need to speak the language of that country. You know, we could we could just grunt and moan and just sit
so
there.
So much easier.
It would be. It'd be much. It'd be more like my first marriage.
That's how, I was going to say, that's how Jake communicates with his wife. He's like, and she brings him a shake. So, I mean, he's got that down pat pretty good.
Yeah, that's why we've been together over 20 years. It works.
There you go. She knows you really well. Yeah. So if you take away the body language and the tone of voice, you've got the words. That's the most important part. And people, because you can't communicate efficiently without talking. I can say, I don't feel good. You can do stuff like that. And if you're playing charades, I mean, we've all played charades and we know that you got to have words. It's tough to just, and you can do anything you want with charades as long as you don't talk. And look how tough that game is. So that whole thing. So I called up Albert Moravian and I said, hey, look, I've been hearing this thing. And everybody's calling it the 7-55-38 rule of communication. And he said, listen to me. I did not come up with that. Somebody else took two studies I did and put those together and somehow came up with this 7-38-55 rule. Mm-hmm. He said, promise me when you, or everywhere you go, so that comes up, will you please straighten them out? Because this is when it first started taking a hold. It was back at, you know, the early 80s.
Yes.
And I said, yeah, I'll tell. So I, to this day, I do. I called him before I did a TEDx talk on all that, on body language and the 7-38-55 rule, all those, how they're the myths of body language. A lot of it is what it was. And I called him and said, hey, I'm getting ready to do this. Can I use your picture and your name? He's like, yeah, please do. You know, he's an older guy now, but still. Yeah. So that was, and a lot of people use that because they're not aware that it's not true, because people will hear things over and you'll hear professionals like in my business that'll open up and, you know, say, 7-38-55 rule, but they just haven't done their research and found out, oh, that's not true. That isn't true. And then you got people like me who like every day look it up and find out what's happening and call people every day, because the information that I give people, if I give them the wrong information, it could get them killed. You know, when I'm not dealing with entrepreneurs, of course, it may get the entrepreneurs killed. But, you know, if I'm dealing with the military or law enforcement, so I make sure everything that I talk about has been researched, and I go back to the dang matrix on that thing to make sure I'm not giving somebody bad information so they don't get hurt or shot or miss something that they should see on someone. So,
Gino, don't go with the 7-38-55, all right?
Will not.
Yeah.
I'll go with the, bring me my shake, woman.
There we go. All right, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Now, we have had a great run in multifamily, going from 0 units to over $250 million in assets. That's over 2,000 apartment deals that we've been able to purchase through our framework, BuyRight, ManageRight, and FinanceRight.
Now, Jake and I, we created the Jake and Gino community back in 2015. We launched our first book, Yield Our Profits. And since then, our students have closed over 60,000 units. That's over $4 billion in assets they've been able to close over the last 6 years.
And that's why this community has been so successful. We call it results-based education, and we pour back into the community everything that we've learned on our journey from zero to 2,000 units and all our systems and scale that we use on our very own property management and investing companies.
Jake, I love that. It's not just education, it's implementation. So what I want you to do, click on that link down below, apply to work with our team, see how we can help you on your journey in multifamily.
All right, we are back. So Gino and myself are business owners. A lot of folks listening right now are business owners. What would the basic tips, because we get pitched a lot from vendors and different folks coming in. So we're on the probably receiving end of pitches more so than giving pitches in many instances. So what the basics should we be looking for to sift through the BS?
Okay, the first thing that when at the Nashville Entrepreneur Center, we had mentors, and these people would be of the highest caliber to come in and help the new startups through there, because we had there was an incubator there that we ran people through called Jumpstart Foundry, and then one became part of the Entrepreneur Center itself. One of the first things I always look for when I'm training the mentors to what to look out for when people would come in to pitch and say, "Can I get in the incubator?" was how much they talked about how much, number one, how much money they have and how well they did just before this. If that's one of the first things out of their mouth, their headset, their mindset isn't where it should be.
Quite often, in the past.
And quite often the people I found that were cons trying to get in, and we could talk for days about how cons work through these incubators and how they were coming to the Nashville EC or Entrepreneur Center. That's one of the first things they'd open up with is, I'm coming out of a thing where we did $100 million in this, or, you know, $5 million in that the first year. And it was just all, when they open up with that, that's one of the key things I look for.
And they wipe their brows because they're sweating.
You know, a lot of times, quite often, they're just the coolest people that you would never suspect. And that makes me go, oh, okay. That's why
he's
I watch those people.
A little too cool.
If they're not a little nervous, that means that they're too confident, and that's why they call him confidence man. You know, that's where con comes from con man.
I thought it was con artist.
Now, I guess you gotta say. I could say con artist as well, because it is an art. But the confidence on them, that's why they're even keeled. So I watch out for the one who's too even keeled. And if they seem too even keeled, then I would push them a little bit and ask them questions or act like I didn't like them or do something like that and see if that made them more nervous or see if they got more confident. And then make decisions about it. Just because they're confident doesn't mean they're a con, but that's one of the first things I look for. When someone's pitching to you, one of the first things to look for is how they address you. I mean, you can sit there and they may not, this may be their first time, their idea may be like Ring. You know, like, did you guys see Shark Tank when the Ring guy came on and nobody invested in it? And now he's a shark too. So you got to watch out for that. That may be happening.
He sold Amazon. Yeah, I know the thing. I didn't see
who's
that one, but I remember them. Yeah, I don't remember his name.
He's a shark.
Just throw it in YouTube and put in, you know, Ring Shark Tank. Oh, it's and you're going
now Amazon
and you're,
owns it.
Yeah, you'll be screaming at your screen, telling them invest in, give them $1. You know, because this guy's like a billionaire now. So anyway. So if they don't get nervous, that's one thing. But if they do get nervous, but you have to put everything into context with what's going on. It depends on their age. It depends on where they really did come from. And did you research this person before they got there? You can't do background checks on everybody. You just have to kind of throw them in the goog and see what comes up, check their LinkedIn, do those types of things, and see if what they're saying is true. Or it may not be true just because it's on the internet or on LinkedIn, but see if they're at least following what they said, you know? So my first thing out of the gate is make sure you know what's coming in. So when you start talking to them, you'll be prepared there. But it's the whole thing of looking for cues that would tell you that person may be being deceptive. lot of times they are being deceptive because they're just trying as hard as they can. They don't know what they're doing. They just know somebody said, you should go down to the Entrepreneur Center, or you should go pitch to these guys. And nobody sat him down and said, look, here's how you pitch. So they'll look nervous. And it doesn't mean they're lying to you. It just means they're nervous and they don't know what they're doing, but they're trying. So those people, you got to kind of take aside and say, look, man, I can see you don't know what you're doing. Let's work on that. Let me tell you, and you guys can say, you know, look, go talk to so-and-so or get some help here. You might want to try this, you know, and then come back once you get that done. Because when I trained entrepreneurs, what I would do is I had for Nashville, I knew all the investors. So what I would do is whatever their business was, I would find the people I knew would not in a million years invest in them. And I'd send them to pitch to those people so they could practice and rehearse. They'd have all the trappings of, oh, this guy's, you know.
Did it ever connect? So much.
No, because I knew, okay. You know, if somebody's just into healthcare and you take them a tech thing that's about fishing,
that'd be great, though,
you're right? Not going to be into it. Then I always got the call afterwards. Okay, your person came, that woman came in and that was funny, but you know, or the guy came in and you know, we don't do fishing stuff here. So I'd always get that, but I'd send them to these people so they could rehearse and practice with all the trappings of that environment. So they get used to it. You get them five or six of those. Then they go into the real one, and you don't tell them that you're doing that, obviously, but that they go in with confidence. By that point, they know what doesn't work and what does work most of the time. But you haven't, they got to rehearse it a lot, you know, practice that a lot.
I got to give you a virtual fist bump right now. So the next time I get the person that comes on that's doing the posture bullshit and telling me how great they are and how much money they've made, I'm going to say, let me cut you off right there because my boy Scott. Okay, Scott Rouse, body language expert, told me to watch out for what you're doing right now, and we're done. We're shutting the meeting down. See, well, there's the door.
They may just be insecure and have to tell you about all that, you know. But that's what I'm saying. You have
that's
to take
not good
all
either,
that into
so.
Context. Yeah.
I agree.
Any book recommendations, anything, you know, body language related or just something that's, you know, added value to your life that you want to share with folks?
A lot of great ones. There's one by Joe Navarro. And it's called What Everybody Is Saying, you know, like not what everybody's saying, but everybody. That's my favorite one. I always suggest that one first for somebody who's just starting. It's a guy named Greg Hartley, Hartley. He's got some great books as well. He's got I think he's got 11 out now. His books are great as well. But start off with what everybody is saying, because if you're quite often when people get into body language, they'll be like, oh, I want to learn all about it. And they'll get one book and they'll be over it. You know, and I should say, I'll get my book because so-and-so, but you're asking me what I would suggest.
Gene already told me to get your book though. We know that much.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the one I'd get Joe's. If my mom came and said, I've got to learn about all this. I said, oh, here you go. I might have a copy of it right here. I've usually got one close, but I don't have one in here. But, that's what I would suggest is getting that one because he writes really well. Everything's easily understandable, and he's not like, this means this. It will suggest something, it indicates something, denotes something, says there's an issue there. That's what he points back to, and it makes complete sense for that. But on negotiation, the Voss book is great. It's a fantastic book. So
yeah. So a lot of the folks in our space are raising money to buy apartment deals. And if they wanted to work with you, what's the best way to get a hold of you? Because I think honing their pitch and honestly, they maybe have never done it before, right? As they're getting into it. So what's the best way they can work with you, get a hold of you, et cetera?
Scott Rouse@scottrouse.com. Just email me or connect with me on LinkedIn or something. And we'll connect that way. That's usually the best way to do it. Easiest and quickest. So, yeah.
We'll leave it there. So Gino, I'm ready for this one. I'm cautiously optimistic. What you got? What you got?
You haven't heard a Gino wrap up in a little while. I'm going to try hard on the Scott Rouse wrap up. He's a little boy walking down the street with his dad, and his dad goes, son, look at that man with the occiput. His occiput's out. Something's going on with that man. And he's learning body language from his dad. And he's enthralled. And he's like, Dad, this is pretty cool. And then he ends up going to Transylvania University, goes to Berklee College of Music, and realizes that he ain't making money in music. So he's got to get a real job. He's got to grow up and make some money. So he goes into body language. And it's just, the book is amazing. I'm going to hold it up one more time. Understanding Body Language, How to Decode Nonverbal Communication in Life, Love, and Work. An amazing book. I would go and I would contact Scott if you're really seriously considering working on your pitch. And I mean, you put the effort and you put the time into it the first time and you understand there are no absolutes. And I'm going to end it with this, Jake. Jesus loves you, but I'm his favorite, my friend.
And you just said there's no absolutes. Stop contradicting yourself.
I can't have that one little win. I still think he loves me more. So
Scott, really, really appreciate it, Tay. And gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy. And that's the body language expert. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks so much.